Welcome to Ringside with AFD, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Avalanche beat writer for ColoradoHockeyNow.com, podcaster here at Mile High Sports, coming to you Wednesday, January 29th, the day after the Avalanche's road trip ended with yet another loss on Long Island, this time 5-2, falling to 0-2 against the Islanders and getting outscored 11-4 in the process. Not a good look. But this is a season of weirdness, and the Avalanche, I think, are 0-2 against Chicago as well. So things haven't been all that great lately. But today we are going to get into something specific. I do want to kind of touch on the road trip as a whole really quickly. But the crux of this podcast is going to be about the NHL trade deadline, but the Colorado Avalanche trade board that I had put out on ColoradoHockeyNow.com earlier in the week. Go to ColoradoHockeyNow.com, subscribe to the email list. You'll get an email every time I publish an article, but you can also find my trade board on there. And if it gets confusing, there was a trade board released on Tuesday, January 21st, and it quickly was outdated because on Monday, January 27th, version 2.0 of the trade board came out. Why 6 days later did a second trade board need to happen? Well, simply because if you've been sleeping under a rock, Mikko Rantanen was traded. So I felt it was necessary to make some updates because with the Rantanen trade comes a change in priority and a change in asset management and what the Avalanche are probably going to do from here on out. I don't think the rumors, the ideas, the game plan, the execution that they have moving forward toward March 7th is the same today as it was before they offloaded. That's a bad word to use. Before they traded Mikko Rantanen to Carolina in that trade for Marty Nature's Jack Drury, a second-round draft pick and a fourth-round draft pick. So let's get into it. First, like I said, I do want to touch on the road trip as a whole and just highlight a couple of quick things. Reflecting back on these three games in four nights that included the night before the first game. Well, three games in four nights, but really it was 2 day games. And the night before that first game, they traded Mikko. So starting with the obvious, Marty Natchez has been good and I really like him. And I think it's okay to be upset that Mikko Rantanen's gone while also liking this player without constantly comparing every aspect of his game to Rantanen's. There are different types of players, different styles of play. But, you know, Rantanen aside, Marty Natchez fits what the Avalanche do. He is a zone entry machine, skates like the wind, 4 assists in 3 games, really nice passes in both for both of his assists against the Islanders. He had that sick feed to Nathan MacKinnon, who sent it to Lehkonen as he was falling to get that goal. Well, after he fell, I should say. And he had that beauty of a pass to Jack Drury, waiting out the Islanders defenders who were kind of lost a little bit going for a change as Drury kind of like snuck in behind them at the red line. Just boom, beautiful pass to Drury. So I do love what he's had, what he's brought to this team and what kind of game he's played in these last three, specifically the last two. But with that, I think when Valeri Nichushkin returns, and obviously it's sounding more and more like that's going to be after the Four Nations, unfortunately, I would love to see Nichushkin with MacKinnon and Natchez because that's going to be a hell of a line. And obviously, Nichushkin was always the best option to play with Nate and Mikko, and I think he's going to be the best option to play with Nate and Marty. So having him on that top line as a finisher and being that net front presence while Natchez and MacKinnon are skating circles around the other team is going to be massive. So those are the two big things that I wanted to touch on. I did want to highlight Arturi Lehkonen, 21st goal of the season in just 40 games. Second time hitting 20 goals. Ties his career high. He had 21 in 64 games 2 years ago. 21 in 40 games this year. Only 8 assists, which kind of a funky, wonky stat there, but when Mittelstadt isn't producing and when Jonathan Drouin is in and out of the lineup and your second winger is God knows who most nights, this is what happens. So totally understandable there. Now, let's get into the trade board. There's a lot more to talk about. If you go to ColoradoHockeyNow.com and click on my 10 observations article reflecting on the Avalanche's emotional road trip, you can kind of dig into a little bit more of my reflections on those three games in 4 days, you know, the post-Rantanen era road trip and how that all came to be. So definitely check that out. But like I said, today's about the trade board, and let's get into it. So like I mentioned earlier, with a trade as big as that one, things change. You have more salary cap, you have more flexibility, you recoup some assets in a second and a fourth rounder. And I know those don't seem like the biggest assets, but those are big. Those are huge. You know, you signed Erik Brännström and shipped him over to Vancouver in that, you know, very, very slick deal where you picked up the Tucker Pullman LTIR cap and netted a fourth round pick. Now you got another fourth and another second. You gave up a second in Kovalenko. You gave up a third for Parsonen. So a lot of moving parts here. The Avalanche are constantly shipping draft picks out while bringing in others. Obviously, in the Mikko Rantanen trade, you got those two picks. So with that being said, let's get into what the Avalanche could do. Now, looking at the salary cap really quickly, Colorado was intending to offer... And actually, it sounds like they did offer, according to Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman, $11.75 million over 8 years to Mikko Rantanen, which would have made him the highest paid winger had he taken that contract. But he obviously did not take that deal. Sorry, multitasking here. So $94 million. I was trying to put that into the calculator. $11.75 over 8 years, $94 million. So what that tells me is they were intending on paying Mikko $11.75 million. And what you ended up getting instead was Marty Natchez at $6.5 million, Jack Drury at $1.75 million, and quite a bit of free cap space on top of that to get to what they were planning on paying Mikko Rantanen. So you have $3.5 million, I should say, left just to get to that $11.75 million. If you include the fact that Jack Drury coming in replaces another roster player who, let's say, he makes league minimum, still means you've cleared up $4.5 million to trade out some insert player X here, you know, one of the AHL call-ups, and Mikko Rantanen for Marty Natchez and Jack Drury, and of course, $4.5 million in cap space. So what can you do with four and a half? Well, you can do quite a bit, because where the Avalanche are right now, I am a big believer and big proponent in them needing several bodies on offense. Right now, they have 12 NHL capable forwards, and they're all playing. The 13th is Val Nichushkin. The 14th is the wild card that will forever be Gabriel Landeskog. So they need more, because right now they are one injury away from having to go back into the AHL well. I wrote an article this morning on Wednesday, well, afternoon, about how I do think that the Avalanche should go after Brandon Saad. That should be someone who they target. And the reason why I say Saad is because he just mutually agreed to terminate his contract with the St. Louis Blues, and he will be a UFA on Thursday when you're listening to this podcast. So trying to bring in Saad, who left the Avs to sign with the Blues 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago now, would be a pretty good move, as just an extra body making $700,000-$900,000. Obviously, the league min is $775,000. Coming in that Zach Parise-esque type of role. You know, not obviously the same type of veteran or cup chasing respectful role as Parise, but you know, in a late January edition, early February edition, it's pretty comparative to what they did with Parise a season ago. So with that being said, $4.5 million, what can you do with it? You can do a lot, because if you're going to make a big move, you're probably going to have a roster player going out the door as well. So for example, the first thing we're going to talk about today is JT Miller. You're not trading for JT Miller without shipping one of Colton or Mittelstadt, most likely Mittelstadt, in that trade. Makes the most sense. So if you have $4.5 million, but you add eight and you subtract 5.75, which is what Mittelstadt makes, you're only taking up 2.25 of that 4.5. So you're only taking up half of it. What can you do with 2.5? Well, you can do quite a bit on defense. What if you decide to use Sam Malinsky in that trade? Well, Sam Malinsky makes $850,000. So if Malinsky and picks and prospects are included in a trade for a defenseman, you don't have 2.25 to pick up a defenseman. You have 2.25 plus the $850,000 that Malinsky makes. And I know I'm going back to that extra cap space for the Rantanen contract, which kicks in next season. But the reason why I'm doing that is because I'm using this for examples of the Avalanche bringing in players who are under contract beyond this season. So it's not just about a rental. Because if it's about a rental, what you were going to pay next season for Mikko doesn't matter. But when it comes to a player like JT Miller, well, now you can fit JT Miller at 8, Marty Nature's at 6.25, or 6.5, and Jack Drury at 1.75. And in totality, that's going to be 16.25, where if you were planning to pay Mikko 11.75 next year, and Casey Mittelstadt 5.75, that adds up to 17.5. So you've already got Drury, Natchez, and Miller less than what you would have paid Rantanen and Mittelstadt next year if that type of a trade was going to happen. With that being said, let's jump into the game names. Number one, you guessed it, JT Miller. I think this is the perfect second line center for the Colorado Avalanche. After this season, he's got 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30. He's got 5 more years left on his deal. This is a guy who signed a 7-year contract and is in the second year of that deal. So, why JT? For starters, he is 31 years old. Seems a little old. Seems a little bit, you know, like a guy that you are kind of weary about the idea of putting 5 more years into him. But the way I see it, JT Miller starting next season, because obviously you're going to have the rest of this year, but starting next year when you've got him locked up for 5 more years at $8 million, number one, the first thing is, if JT Miller was a UFA this summer, I would not be opposed to giving him a 5-year contract. You know, we've seen it with guys like Joe Pavelski. There's another example that I'm going to get into is a more obvious comparison in a moment. But I wouldn't be opposed to giving him a 5-year deal at the age of 32. Given the type of player he is, given the cap window that the cup window the Avalanche are in. And obviously, this is under the impression that he's going to make $8 million in a year where the salary cap's about to jump $7 or $8 or $9 million this summer and then jump even more next year and then just go bonkers off the wall in a couple years. So the reason why, to me, the big reason why Miller for 5 more years, even though he'll be 32 next season, doesn't really bother me, and why it shouldn't, more importantly, bother Chris McFarland, because he is the GM. Him and Joe Sakic are the ones that make the decisions, not the guy that's podcasting from, you know, his office. The reason why it's not a big deal to them and shouldn't be is because they were willing to give, and they offered Nazem Kadri a 4-year deal at the age of 32. If they were willing to give Kadri 4 years at the age of 32, I don't think you're going to have an issue with giving JT Miller 5 more years at the age of 32 for $8 million. I know Naz got 7 from Calgary, but the deal was reported to be 6.25 from the Avalanche. So you're going $1.75 million more per year for one more season. With the way the salary cap is going, that extra season isn't going to mean what it would have meant in this day and age. So I think it would be totally fine on that front. I also think he is the perfect type of killer of a player. Like, the Avalanche have killers in their lineup. Nathan McKinnon's a killer. Gabriel Landeskog, if he ever plays again, he's a killer. Lekkonen and Chushkin, those guys are killers. Add JT Miller to that, man, you got a whole bunch of killers there. Marty Natchez, we'll see. Jonathan Drouin, we didn't get a big enough sample size of him in the playoffs. But the big four tenacious that I would see kind of all coming together are Val and Arturi and Nate and JT Miller all together. And that doesn't even include the fact that if you get Gabe Landeskog back, man, you got a lot of hungry players in that lineup. You also have a hungry player in JT who, the reason why there's drama happening in Vancouver is because he expects more out of his teammates and just doesn't know how to properly, talk to Elias Pettersson about the fact that he doesn't really care much or doesn't show that he cares much, even though he's a skillful player. So it's not necessarily the message he's trying to get to Elias Pettersson. It's the way he goes about presenting it and the way he communicates it. Well, you take JT Miller, you put him in a locker room led by Nathan McKinnon and Cale Makar, two guys that are hungry to win every single night, and Devon Taves, who, you know, openly goes to the media and says there's a lot of guys in this room If you guys remember a year and a half ago, he went in and said, there's a lot of guys in this room that think they're playing well, but they aren't. JT's not going to have that issue here. So I think he would fall in line pretty well with this core. And he's a hell of a player. Had 103 points last year. And the drama in Vancouver this year is a big reason why the Canucks are not doing well. It's a big reason why he's struggling. It's a big reason why that team is struggling as a whole. Granted, they've won three straight. So with that being said, JT Miller would be a slam dunk addition to this team. Throw in Casey Mittelstadt, throw in whatever you... If you got to throw in the second rounder you just got from Carolina, so be it. The fourth rounder, so be it. They want a young defenseman like a Sam Malinsky maybe. So like, do whatever you got to do. Get this guy in the door. Just try not to give up Callum Ritchie in that deal, obviously. Next piece. So these are in no particular order except for JT. That's my top choice now. First edition of my trade board, it was Yanni Gourde. But that was back when I thought the Avalanche needed a third line center. But now they traded Mikko and they supposedly have their third line center guy in Jack Drury. But I'd love to see JT Miller. Again, I'm not trying to ship Mittelstadt out the door. If it was possible to get JT and keep Mittelstadt, I would say, or sorry, not JT. If it was possible to get a rental second line center, like let's say a Brock Nelson, and keep Casey Mittelstadt just to say, hey, Casey, Nelson's coming to help us this year, but this is still your role. Get your shit together by next season. That would be one thing. But if you're bringing in someone who's locked up like Miller, you're going to have to ship Mittelstadt out the door. He's going to have to be part of that trade. Moving on to defense. Like I said, no particular order. Seth Jones is intriguing. And yes, he makes $9.5 million, but this is a right shot defenseman. UFA in 2030, the same year as JT Miller. He's about a year and a half younger, so he would also be in that 30-year-old range next season, entering five more years left on his contract. But if the Avalanche could get, and I know teams don't want to eat up salary cap for many, many years, but Toronto Maple Leafs once upon a time ate like 6 years of a contract making 1.2 for Phil Kessel to ship him to Pittsburgh. With the way the cap is rising, I think you can go higher than that and it's not a huge deal. Moral of the story, if you can get Seth Jones for $6 million, sign me the frickin' bleep up. Bring this guy in. Right shot defenseman, can play 21, 22, 23, 24, 25 minutes a night with ease. And would round out that top four playing alongside Sam Girard with Devontaeves and Kale McCarr on the first pair. All four of those guys would stay together for a long, long time. I would be all for this move. In fact, Devontaeves, who was born in February of 1994, what's his birthday exactly? February 21st. So he's about less than a month away from turning 31 years old. Devontaeves is actually 8 months older than Seth Jones. And you've got him locked up for six more seasons after this. So you would have Seth Jones for five more years after this. Taves for six more years after this. And then, of course, you got mid-20s in Kale McCarr and Sam Girard. That would be a formidable top four. Sign me the hell up for Seth Jones if you can find a way to get him in here at $6 million. If you need to make the money work, maybe Josh Manson's included in the trade. But if you want to keep Josh Manson on the fourth pair, on the third pair, not to be confused with the fourth line, then find a way to make that work too. But this is where the money gets a little sticky. Bringing in a defenseman for $6 million, someone is making a lot of money, has to go out. Maybe Ross Colton if you bring in offense from elsewhere. But now you're kind of picking from all over the lineup and a lot of moving parts. So Seth Jones makes a lot of sense for me. Is it going to happen before the trade deadline? I don't know, especially if JT Miller happens. Like, the Avalanche aren't going to trade for Miller and Jones after trading Rantanen and just completely shake up the locker room. I don't know if that would be the case. But like I said on the trade board on ColoradoHockeyNow.com, this team just traded Mikko Rantanen. Nothing will surprise me anymore. Third on my list, pretty damn big name, crazy big player, not in terms of size and stature, but in terms of name and resume. Brad Marchand, pure rental, obviously one of Nathan MacKinnon's Nova Scotian buddies. I don't know if they're actually good friends the way that Sid is with, with Marshawn and the chemistry they have in international tournaments. But Brad is going to the Four Nations face-off as well, and there's a chance that McKinnon, Crosby, and Marshawn might all play together. That's the spot that Bergeron used to be in with Marshawn and Crosby. So this would be a fun one. He's in the last year of his contract with Boston, and they're kind of struggling. We saw Stamkos move on. We saw Ryan O'Reilly get traded from St. Louis in the last year of his deal. I know that's a little bit different because O'Reilly had played for two teams before becoming the captain of the Blues and won a cup there, obviously, in a Conn Smythe. But it's just a matter of, is Brad Marchand actually going to get traded, or is this someone that Boston sees as the type of franchise legend who needs to finish his career with one team? It's anybody's guess. So he would be fun, especially in the playoffs. Moving on to another right-hand defenseman, right-shot defenseman. He is 2 years older than Seth Jones, but his contract is 3 years less in term than Seth Jones, and that's Rasmus Ristolainen, another big body who can play top 4 minutes. He's playing 20 minutes a night. He makes $5.1 million, so you would probably want a little bit of that to be retained, I think. But he would be fun to have, and I think if you brought him in, it would be a little bit easier to keep Josh Manson as well. Granted, again, I'm not even going to predict what these trades would take because there are so many moving parts with the Avalanche right now. It's hard to really determine, like, how many players do they want to ship out the door? What kind of assets? What kind of draft picks? What kind of prospects? So where there's a will, there's a way. But, you know, Ristolainen's a player that hasn't always had the best track record in terms of analytics and being a good sound defenseman, but his numbers actually look a hell of a lot better this year. His advanced statistics look a hell of a lot better. He's playing 20 minutes per night. He only played 16 minutes per night a season ago, so John Tortorella is sure as hell rewarding him with more ice time. And in terms of being an efficient stay-at-home defenseman, like, the Avalanche have a track record of developing these type of guys, and you know, no better example than Jack Johnson, who was also an analytics nightmare, who joined the Avalanche after being bought out in the past and being kind of like the scapegoat. It's all his fault pretty much on the last team he played for. Well, two teams before Pittsburgh, because he played like 15 games for the Rangers the year before he joined the Avs. But they brought him in on a PTO and they turned him into three playoff runs. So Ristolainen would be my next on the list. Going back to pure rental, so remember that idea I had about maybe you trade for a pure rental center and tell Casey Mittelstadt, hey, you're staying on this team, you're going to play wing, you're going to play center, third line, fourth line, we don't give a shit, figure it out by next October because you'll be our number two center again. Michael Granlund. Brock Nelson also fits the bill, so I'm going to kind of sandwich those two in together. But Granlund's got 43 points, Nelson's a little bit less than that. He's a goal scorer. We just saw him on Long Island against the Islanders. These would be the types of players that would give you the option, again, if needed, to keep Casey Mittelstadt and see what happens in the summer. Obviously, another example of that would be Yanni Gourde. But Gourde's a little bit different because Gourde's not going to center your second line. So actually, he's not another example of that. I take that back. But if the Avalanche were to bring in Yanni Gourde, he can play on the wing maybe. He could center the third line and Chris. Jack Drury goes down to the fourth line. He can be on the fourth line. He's got some chemistry with Ross Colton. He's got Stanley Cup pedigree. So, you know, there could be an opportunity for Yanni Gourde and Colton to both play on the wing with Drury at center, for example. Another defenseman, Ivan Provorov. This one's a little bit tricky because he's a left shot D, but he would be a pure rental, and if he was to come in, assuming you would want to use him on the second pair, he would need to shift to the right or have Sam Girard shift to the right. But if you're going to keep Josh Manson and bring in a Provorov, then, you know, you can go five defensemen deep and just have depth. You know, it's a crazy concept. Because he's a pure rental, I think that would probably be the way they would go. Granted, again, Taves and Girard would be playing ahead of him in the lineup, or maybe him and Girard would be alternating. Whoever's playing better that night will get more ice time, obviously, which is something we saw with Bo Byram when he was here with him and Girard. But having Bo Byram on the third pair was a luxury that this team could sure as hell have again. Only problem with Provorov is number one, Columbus is in the playoff race. And number two, even if they decided to trade him, he's 27. He might fetch the most, which includes a first round pick, which I don't know if the Avalanche would do that. Moving on, I'm going to list two more centers here. Scott Laughton and Morgan Frost, again, lumping them together because they both play for Philly. Scott Laughton's got another year on his contract at $3 million next season, and he is 30 years old. Morgan Frost is 6 years younger, 24, but he's only making $2.1 million, and he is team-controlled as an asset because he is an RFA at the end of this season. Morgan is a player that's been on the market before in the John Tortorella era. Last season, he had 41 points. The season before, he had, 46 points. This season, he's got 25 and 48. So he's hovering around that 43-ish point pace, playing 15 minutes per night, played 15:50 last year and 16:21 the year before. He would take quite a bit to bring in. First round draft pick in 2017. That's the Cale Makar draft. So he would cost a little bit to bring in, but he would be a fun addition because he would be a piece for the future. Scott Laughton wouldn't be quite the same, but he would be somebody that the Avalanche are committing to for next season as well, which might spell the end of Ross Colton or Miles Wood at some point. But he would be a fun addition to bring in. He's got a lot of that tenacious ability that you would love to have in the playoffs. And my goodness, at this point, I don't remember how long Laughton's been in the playoffs. Been in the NHL because he's been around for quite a while. I want to see if he's played in the playoffs. He probably has with the Flyers. 2020. Oh yeah, 2020. I forgot the Flyers. They pretty much did what the Avalanche did. They went two rounds deep and lost in Game 7. The same day that the Avalanche lost to the Dallas Stars in Game 7. So he was excellent in that series. Man, I remember that Flyers team. And then Matt Niskanen retired and they just kind of went to hell. But he also played six playoff games in 2018 and three of them in 2016. But his first big role was in 2020. Played 15 games, 5 goals, 4 assists, 9 points, playing 15 minutes per night. Had a game-winning goal in overtime. 21 PIMs. My goodness, he would be fun. Let's keep moving on. David Savard, right shot defenseman from the Montreal Canadiens. Another piece of the 21 Tampa Bay Lightning team. Obviously, Ross Colton scored the cup-winning goal that year. Yanni Gourde, another example of a player who won the cup that year. David Savard's ice time has dropped to 18:07. He's played at least 20 minutes per night for each of the previous 5 years before that. So his role has kind of lessened quite a bit. Makes $3.5 million UFA in July. If you can get this player half salary retained because he's kind of fallen out of favor in Montreal as a top four guy and maybe they just want to get an asset for him, he would be perfect to slot in on the third pair and fix whatever the hell's going on with the Avalanche beyond their top four. Granted, Josh Manson's kind of been struggling. My preference is to bring in someone like Ristolainen who can at least play on the second pair and push Manson down. Or if Manson's playing well enough, Ristolainen can play on the third pair. But it's at least someone that you would trust in a second pair role. I don't know if at 34 years old you would trust David Savard in that type of role. But obviously, Ristolainen's got commitment. David Savard's a pure rental. There's also Marcus Pettersson, similar to Ivan Provorov, younger guy, 28 years old, UFA in July, left shot D. He would be someone that plays beyond Devontaeves and Sam Girard on your left side on the third pair and give you that luxury that you had in Bo Byram. But then there's also Mario Ferraro, 26 years old, $3.25 million, not a lot of money, UFA in 2026. This one is my favorite of the possible additions, maybe aside from Seth Jones, for many reasons. Number one, Ferraro's got a ton of leadership qualities in him. He's the exact type of player that the Avalanche like to target. Number two, this one's just for fun. The dude looks just like Miles Wood. It is scary. Down to the missing teeth. But the real number two is, he played with Cale Makar at UMass. Not that that matters a whole lot because Girard and Taves have a hell of a lot more chemistry than with Cale than Mario Ferraro ever did. but he would be an excellent addition. Again, great puck moving defenseman. He's got a lot of physicality to his game. I think he would fit the Avalanche system well. At $3.25 million, even if the Sharks decide we're not eating any cap, he would be a wonderful addition to your third pair. He plays a lot. Plays 20-29 per night. He played 22-52 last year, 21 the year before, 23 the year before, 22 the year before that. He plays a ton of minutes for a bad San Jose Sharks team. I would love to see him and his 209-pound frame with the Avalanche to see what he can do with a team like that. And again, at $3.25 million, you get him for a couple more seasons after this at a cap, or sorry, one more season after this at a cap hit. That's not at all that bad to have on the third pair. He would be a ton of fun. He's also the kind of guy that an injury to Gerard or Taves, you can slot him in into the top four. Again, luxury, just like Bowen Byram. Top four guy playing on your third pair. Moving on from there, Jake Evans, center, Montreal Canadiens, $1.7 million UFA in July. Similar to Provorov and the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Montreal Canadiens are still in the playoff race. I actually want to take a look at the wild card. Montreal's kind of fallen out of favor recently with some losses here. But the Red Wings have won three straight. They're 6-3-1 in their last 10, and that has tied them precisely with the Montreal Canadiens with a record of 24-21-5. And the Red Wings have the tiebreaker in regulation wins and regulation plus overtime wins. So Montreal is currently, they would have to jump Detroit and Columbus and Tampa Bay or Boston to get into that spot. In the wild card race, one of the two wild card spots, I should say. But 50 games, 53 points. Ahead of them, the Red Wings, 50 games, 53 points. Ahead of them, the Blue Jackets, 50 games, 55 points. Ahead of them, the Lightning, 49 games, 55 points. But more importantly, Boston, 52 games, 56 points. So they are technically 3 points back of the Bruins with two games in hand. A hot week for any team and a bad week for any other team will change the tune of this wild card race. And that doesn't even include the Rangers right beneath them, 52 points in 50 games. A lot of teams vying for playoff positioning. Islanders, 51 points in 49 games. So moral of the story, just like Provorov, we would have to see where the Montreal Canadiens are. I could see him trading David Savard regardless, because that's a player that's not playing a big role on their team anymore since they brought in Carrier. I think David Savard's now on the fourth pair, but I'm going to look that up right now and see what their line combinations look like last time they played. And I was right, yeah. So you got Matheson and Carrier, you got Lane Hudson and Caden Gooley, and then your third pair is David Savard and Arber Jacki. So I can see I'm trading him. Jake Evans, I don't know. Number one, there's been contract talks with Evans. They kind of want to keep him if they can make the money work. Number two, he's a big reason why they're playing so well. He's having a hell of a season, like a crazy, crazy good season for his standards. So maybe you want to reward him and the team and just kind of kick the negotiations down the road. Jake Evans, 11 goals, 25 points in 50 games. So he's averaging exactly a half a point per game. His career high is 29 points, and he did that in 72 games. Last year in 82 games, 28 points. So do I think he can help the Avalanche? Yes. Not as much now after the Jack Drury addition, because they probably would play similar type of roles, but he's an added depth piece. Do I think the Avalanche, if he does well, should sign him to an extension? Absolutely not, because this looks like the outlier year that's going to lead to a contract extension where he's going to make a lot of money. So he doesn't make the most sense. Or I should say this. He doesn't make as much sense as he did pre-Rantanen trade, but he's still an option. Now, moving on to the honorable mentions, I got a couple names on here. Matthew Olivier, Columbus Blue Jackets. Good Lord, I would give everything to have this guy on my team. Not literally, but man, I love him. Perfect fourth liner, younger player, one of the only enforcers left in the game, but one with a scoring touch. 27 years old, UFA this summer, 10 goals in 50 games. 6'1", 226 pounds. He's a monster. He would be a lot of fun. But again, just like Provorov, Blue Jackets want to keep him. And if they don't keep him, they're still in a playoff race. We already went over Brock Nelson. Rasmus Anderson's on this list. I don't think Calgary's moving him anytime soon. I had Nick Bjugstad here, and he's still here. I don't think he makes sense anymore after the trade and Jack Drury joining the equation. Last one is Ian Cole. If you're going to go the route where you're okay with Josh Manson in your top four and you need a third pair guy, who better than Ian Cole, who's a player that on the right side has familiarity with the organization. 35 years old, but the crazy part about him, well, he'll be 36 really soon in less than a month. But the crazy thing about him is he's had some pretty damn good years in the last two or three seasons where his role has been elevated and the his advanced analytics, his defensive numbers, his Corsi numbers, all of them have kind of gone up over the last few seasons since joining the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2023. He even had a good year in 2022 with the Carolina Hurricanes. He was obviously good for the Wild the year the Avalanche traded him. But this year he's done so well that he is playing 21.02 per game. The reason why that number is a big number is because that is the highest time on ice per game he has had in his career. Obviously, part of that has to do with the fact that John Marino and who's the other defenseman for Utah that's been injured all year? Let me pull it up. I don't know why the name is escaping me, but Utah lost two defensemen to injuries pretty early in the season. Sean Durzi was the other one. So because of that, Ian Cole, John Marino's now back, obviously, but because of that, Ian Cole has spent the majority of the season playing in a top four role, which wasn't supposed to be the case, but he's done well. So he would be another example of a guy you can put on the third pair as a pure rental and shift him with Manson if needed. If Manson struggles, you got a guy behind him that you can trust. Ian Cole trading him in 2021 hurt the Avalanche that year, and they kind of didn't fully recover from missing that type of player until they went out and traded for and brought in someone like Manson pretty much a year later. So that's my trade board. That is what I have uploaded right now. A lot of big names, a lot of moving parts. I don't like to be the guy that just like throws every big name onto the trade board and be like, oh, the Avalanche are obviously interested in this guy and that guy and that guy. But again, post Mikko Rantanen trade, nothing will surprise me. The Avs have a little bit more cap flexibility. They'll have recouped some assets in that trade. I think the Avalanche should go all in. God, JT Miller would be so fun. I don't know about you guys. I just love the idea of having that guy on that team, playing with hungry guys like Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar and Devon Taves. So we'll see if they actually do it. We'll see what happens here, obviously, with all the drama going on in Vancouver and the recent comments from Jimmy Rutherford, I should say. It's very clear that trades are coming for the Vancouver Canucks, and I think this is the perfect opportunity for the Avalanche to strike. With that being said, the Avalanche practice Thursday. I am so excited for that because it's time to meet the new guys and see exactly what Jared Bednar and people in the locker room are thinking. So it's going to be really tough to go in there and not see Mikko. But I'm excited to get the ball rolling on these next two home games and that practice on Thursday. So if you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little hearts. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we outcha.